All right, we're beginning in Daniel chapter 6. Before we get into 6, if you'll notice on the first part of your, the first question on your study guide, you know, the 531 argument. And I just gave it all to you just like that. The 531 argument. Now, if you remember, hard to see. Hey, Tyler? Can you get these lights, please? Thank you, sir. Now, if you remember in the introduction, I said that in this class we'll have debates about the liberal position and the dispensational premillennialist position. The liberals will use 530 and 531 to show that the book of Daniel has no prophetic material in it. In other words, if you remember, the liberal position was Babylon, Media, Persia, and then Greece. Rome is not in the equation according to the liberal position. And they will use passages like this, 530 and 531, to show that to teach that there was an independent Median kingdom between Babylon and Persia. But when you research the last part of chapter 5, as I have up here, it says verse 31 of chapter 5 does not belong in chapter 5. It does not. In the Aramaic and other manuscripts, it belongs to chapter 6. It begins a new chapter with a new purpose. It does not teach, nor does it say, that there was an independent Median empire. And it does not say that Darius the Mede received the kingdom that night. Now, I'll go ahead and give you just a few more minutes to copy that down. Now, why am I giving you this? Well, simply because you will read in some of your commentaries, and you will read or run across maybe one or two who will take the position that there was an independent Median empire, because they too will say that there is no predictive prophecy in the Bible. It is just facts that has been written down. So that's one of the reasons I think you need to have this information. As I pointed out before, there's a lot of things in Daniel that we're going to miss. We're not studying Daniel to get a lot of lessons out of it. We're studying Daniel to be able to talk to our family members or our people that work with us or whoever it is, who may not see clearly what the Bible teaches about certain things. So, this is why I've given you this.
Question for you.
Go with it.
If we have an argument that comes up to us and a person says, this does not belong in chapter 5, the first point that you have up, what point would we use to prove against that?
Well, you just say it doesn't belong to chapter 5. It does not belong to chapter 5. It belongs to chapter 6. Number one, they would have to have a reason to say why it belongs to chapter 5. Now, if you were here last week, you remember when we were talking about Belshazzar being the son of Nebuchadnezzar. And I pointed out that he wasn't the son of Nebuchadnezzar. Wasn't even related to him blood-like. And the woman who came out and said, God said he was, you know.
But I'm talking about each one of those points that you've made. There's got to be some proof, some place to contradict the person that's saying it. In other words, you've got to have something to say to them other than just saying, you know, saying that is what I'm getting at.
Okay, so you're saying that if somebody comes up to you, it says that chapter 5 and verse 30, that verse 31 does belong in chapter 5. You want to know what proof you have.
Yeah.
that it does not belong. Is that what you're asking me?
Well, that, the same thing, Aramaic belongs to chapter 6. And I'm talking about each one of those points that you've made. There's statements that are being made, but we have no proof one way or another to contradict somebody else's statement.
Okay, let's look down here at point D. Okay, let's get away from the translation. Let's just look at point D. Does history, not the Bible, does world history teach that there was a Median, independent Median empire?
Yes.
No, it doesn't. World history does not say that there was a Median, independent Median empire between Babylon and Persia. Now, if you'll look in chapter 6. And look, if you will, at verse 8. Now, O king, establish the law and sign the writing that it be changed not according to the law of who?
Medes
and the Persians. You'll look again in verse 12. It says at the end of the thing is true according to the law of who? Medes and the Persians. And you'll see the same thing in verse 15. You'll see where the Medes and the Persians are together as one group. Now, to make it a little clearer from a biblical standpoint, turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 36. Now, beginning in verse 17 of 2 Chronicles chapter 36, excuse me. It talks about the Chaldeans who slew the young men of the sanctuary. It talks about basically Babylon's captivity of Judah. Okay? That's what it's talking about in verse 17 and following. In verse 20, and them that had escaped from the sword carried away to Babylon, they were servants to him and his sons until the reign of the kingdom of who?
Persia.
Verse 21, to fulfill the word of the mouth by Jeremiah until the land had been enjoyed its Sabbath. Now, verse 22. Well, 67 years at the end of verse 21. There's the 70-year captivity that was prophesied in the book of Jeremiah. Okay? So, we have Babylon carrying the Judeans off into, slaying them and carrying some off into Babylon for 70 years, which was prophesied by Jeremiah the prophet. Now, look at verse 22. Now, in the first year of who?
Cyrus, king of Persia.
We have gone from Babylon to who? Persia. That the word of Jehovah by the mouth of Jeremiah might be accomplished, Jehovah stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, the king of the Persians, that he made proclamation throughout all of his kingdom to put into writing, saying, thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kings of the earth had Jehovah God of heaven given me, and he had charged me to build who? His house, where? In Jerusalem, which is in Judea. Whosoever there is among you, all of his people, Jehovah his God shall be with him, and let him go up. So, as we end the chronicle letter, we see that they were in captivity, and it is Cyrus who frees them, not Darius the Mede. Now, Ezra chapter 1 will say the same thing. Now, I want you to turn to Isaiah chapter, 44. Yeah, Isaiah 44. All right. The context of chapter 4 is that they are in Babylon, but deliverance from Babylon is coming. If you'll look at the last verse, 28, of Isaiah 44. Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and shall perform all my pleasure, even saying of Jerusalem, she shall be built, and of the temple the foundation shall be laid. So it is Cyrus who lets the people go back into Judea to not only to build the city, but the temple. In Isaiah chapter 45, beginning in verse 11, thus says Jehovah, the Holy One of Israel and his Maker, ask me of these things that are to come, concerning my sons and concerning the work of my hands command you me. I have made earth and created man upon it. I, even my hands, have stretched out of heavens, and all their hosts have I commanded. I have raised him up in the righteousness, and I will make straight his way. He will build my city and let my exiles go free, not for price or reward, says Jehovah of hosts. Once again, he is talking about Cyrus, king of the Persians. So when somebody comes up to you and says that 531 belongs in chapter 5, he doesn't care what the text says or the Aramaic says. He doesn't care that it begins a new chapter with a new purpose. It does tell you that whoever let the captives out of Babylon go back into Judea was Cyrus the Persian. That's biblical. Okay? That answered your question.
Yes. So, real quick, Ed, is it just safe to say that when they translated it, chapter 6 is just a bad break?
Right.
I mean, if 31 would have been under there and that would have been chapter 6, that's basically what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's part of chapter 6.
Right.
They just put that chapter break there and it's
right.
Not in the original.
Yes. That seems to be what it is, especially in the Aramaic. I don't even think it's in the Greek text, if I remember correctly. So it's just the way that they broke up the chapters. If you taught an independent Median kingdom, then the break would be just fine. But the way the Bible presents it, it was Persia who conquered Babylon. It was Persia under Cyrus who set the people going. Anybody else? Good question, Rod. Thanks. All right. Now, to finish this thought, these are the three facts that are stated in, and you'll have to write this under the argument of 531.1. The three, Belshazzar was slain, verse 30. Darius the Mede receives the kingdom, in verse 31, and Darius was 62 years old. That's all that is stated in verses 30 and 31. These are the three facts you can be assured of. History will reveal that it was the army of Cyrus who captured Babylon on the night of 12 October 539 BC. History will also reveal Cyrus was a warrior. He cared nothing about sitting on a throne and commanding from there. He wanted to conquer lands. And as he went through his conquering, this is what he liked doing. He did not like, well, this might be taken wrong. He did not like to rule. He liked to conquer, okay? He would set up sub-rulers under him wherever he went. That way they could take care of business, and then he could go on and do what he liked. Some people like to fight. Cyrus was one of them. And there are men in history who like to conquer lands. And this is who Cyrus is. So it was Cyrus who conquered the Babylonian people. Now, point number two, the identity of Darius the Mede. There are those who say he was Cambyses. He was the son of Cyrus. There are also those who say he was a figment of somebody's imagination. Guess which view that is? It's a liberal view. There was a brother in the Brotherhood who said he was an unknown king between Belshazzar and Cyrus. And from what I understand, he changed his mind about that, or at least saw the difficulties in it, just basically from the history and the biblical history of it was Cyrus who conquered Babylon. And then the fourth one, Gubaru, which was a general and possibly a governor under Cyrus, Gubaru. Of these four are four positions that some take, it is said that the last one, Gubaru, is the one that might be the correct one. Now, I'm bringing that out as you study your commentaries. You will see a lot of them go with Gubaru. Now, the reason why Gubaru may have credibility is simply because the Nabonidus Chronicles has a word in there that they say was mistranslated, and it should be translated Gubaru. And it's from that mistranslation of the Nabonidus Chronicles that Gubaru seems to have the best argument. Okay? But I'm not going to let you off that easy. I'm going to give you arguments against it. On the first point, as Cambyses, he was the son of Cyrus, and his mother was Persian. Therefore, he could not be called the seed of the Mede. He could not be called a Mede. He was a Persian. Under the second point, the figment of someone's imagination, that has no credibility at all. No credibility at all. And like I said, the only reason why this is up there is simply because they do not want predicted prophecy in the book of Daniel, so they'll twist anything that they can to show that Daniel was written during the Maccabean period, which was around 167-164 BC, or possibly later in some ideas. The unknown king between Belshazzar and Cyrus, I think we've already defeated that argument with Rod's question. So that leaves us Gubaru. And like I said, that seems to be the best argument because of the mistranslation of the Nabonidus Chronicles. But he was never called king in history. Nowhere in history is he called a king. Nowhere in history is Gubaru ever called, in recorded history anyway, nowhere in recorded history is he called Darius. And there's nowhere in history that anybody knows of his nationality. So what I'm telling you, this Darius the Mede of Daniel chapter 6, 531 and chapter 6, nobody really knows who he is. There's no concrete evidence. We do not know when he received the kingdom, simply because we do not know who he was. Chapters 9 and 10 of the book of Daniel may indicate that he received the kingdom in the third year of the reign of Cyrus. May indicate that he, as chapters 9 and 10 of Daniel, may indicate that he received the kingdom during the third year of Darius. What I want you to see out of all of this is just simply the text does not say that Darius the Mede received the kingdom the night that Belshazzar was slain. It does not teach that there was an independent Median empire. And even if it did, what would that establish? It would just only establish that Cyrus put Darius in charge the night that Babylon was captured. So there's really no argument there at all. We know that Cyrus was a ruler, that he was the conqueror, and he was the one through prophetic writings. He was the one who was to let the captives go back into their land. He was the one who said that rebuild your city and your temple. We know that Cyrus captured Babylon. History will show it clear. 539 B.C. Any questions? All right. Chapter 6 of the book of Daniel. On your study guide, that would be The Trap is Set, chapter 6, verses 1 through 9. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps, or some of your translations will say princes, who should be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three presidents, or some of your translations will say administrators, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might give account unto them, and that the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was distinguished above the presidents and the satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and the satraps sought to find occasion against Daniel as to touching the kingdom, but they could find no occasion nor faults, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, "We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God." Then these presidents and satraps assembled together to the king and thus said unto him, "King Darius, live forever. All the presidents and the kingdom of the deputies and the satraps, the counselor and the governors have consulted together and to establish a royal statute and to make a strong interdict that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, say of you, O king, he shall be thrown into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the interdict and sign the writing that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which alters not. Wherefore, King Darius signed and signed the writing and the interdict." So, verse 1 through 9 of chapter 6, the trap is set. First question is, why did the presidents and the satraps seek to find something against Daniel? Basically, they were jealous. They were jealous. They were envious. Here they are. They were probably ethnically Persians or Medians, men who have had honor in their own way for a while, and now some captivity from the land of Judah is being over us. So they were jealous and they were envious. For time's sake. Point two, what law did they push to get passed and why? The law that they pushed to get passed, 30 days, no man was to ask, bless you, no man was to ask of anything of any god or any man except for the king. Now you can see why they would come up with this law, simply because I'm sure the king thought this was a good idea. They came up with this law because they could not find no fault in Daniel. He was a godly man. The reason why he was a godly man is the reason why Darius put him in charge of everybody. Simply because this was a man who would run the kingdom for the good of the kingdom. So they couldn't find any fault in him, so they had to go against him and his religion. There's a lesson here for us. They always say hindsight is 20/20, and that's a good saying. In the past years, those who are against religion, those who are against God, has done everything that they can to slowly chip away against the rights of a religious world. Some of you can remember when prayer was allowed in school. It's no longer allowed. Just because of the interpretation that they had, the separation between church and state, which is a fallacy itself. They misinterpreted what was meant by that. And then the big uproar about taking under God out of the Pledge of Allegiance. Now, I know the words were added after the Pledge of Allegiance was established. I understand that. The point I'm saying, they're offended by it. One or two said, I don't want my children saying that. We do not believe in God. And then we want to make sure that anything that has anything to do with religion is taken out of the public buildings, the public courthouses, and things like that. You see how they're chipping away? Little by little by little. Everybody knows of the baker down in Denver who was set up. It was a setup, everybody knows it, by the two what we call rainbow people. And isn't that a shame? Isn't that a shame that they took the rainbow? What does a rainbow mean to you? There's a promise of God that God made that he would never destroy the world again by flood. They've taken the rainbow away from us and used it for their own thing. And they set this guy up for their own gain. The time's coming, it's already happening in Canada, or trying to happen in Canada, where if a man does not marry a couple of their persuasion, he can be thrown in jail. It's working its way through here. Now I'm bringing all this up to show why they're treating Daniel. We're in Daniel chapter 6. Daniel three times a day prayed. They could not find any fault in him, so they used his godly habits to make a law against him. It's a lousy law. Any law that's not for the good of the people is a lousy law. And any politician who would come up with a law like this, or who would bend laws or refuse to act on laws, is a lousy politician. And this is what we see here in Daniel. They couldn't find anything wrong with Daniel, so they had to make a law against his godly practice. verses 10 through 18, the trap is sprung. 10 through 18, the trap is sprung. And when Daniel knew the writing and was signed, he went into his house. Now his windows, notice, his windows were open. He practiced his religion openly. Tore in his chamber toward Jerusalem, and he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before God as he did aforetime. And these men assembled together and found Daniel making petition and supplication before God. Then they came near before the king concerning the king's law. Have you not signed a law that every man shall not make petition unto any god or man within 30 days save you? And the king shall be cast down into the den of lions. The king answered and said, the thing is true according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which alters not. Then answered they and said before the king that Daniel, who is of the children of the captivity of Judah, regards not you, O king, or the law that you have signed, and makes his petition 3 times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased, and he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to rescue him. Then these men assembled together unto the king and said unto the king, know, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and the Persians, that no interdict nor statute which the king established may be changed. So here we are, the trap is sprung. Daniel keeps up with his practice. Now, how did these men know to go at a certain time to see Daniel do this? This is point one on your study guide under the trap is sprung. Daniel knew of the law, and yet he went ahead and kept up his religious practice. His faith was in his God, not in those around him. They went to the king and told him, this Daniel is violating this law you had set up. You think the king had knew he was conned? He'd been tricked into something? So he tries to change it. He tries to figure a way out. But these men come up before him, much like the men came up during the time of the trial of our Lord, where they said, if you let him go, Pilate, you're not a friend of Caesar's. If you let him go, Darius, we'll go to the king Cyrus about this. He had no way out. He's unhappy. He wants to deliver him, but he cannot change the law. So Daniel is cast into the lion's den. Now, very quickly, the trap backfires. Verses 19 through 28. We won't read it for time's sake. But basically, the king has Daniel laid into, or put into the lion's den. In verse 16, last part, he will say, your God whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. He had the right words, but he didn't believe it. He didn't believe it because if you look at verse 18, he spent a night of fasting. There was no instruments of music, and his sleep fled from him. He had insomnia. And then as we get into verse 19, the very next morning, he rose and went to the den of lions. He cries out with a lamentable voice, oh, Daniel. See, he didn't think Daniel would be there. He was hoping he'd be there, but he didn't think he'd be there. Has your God delivered you? Daniel was protected. He cries out, oh, king, I am here. God has sent forth his angel to shut the mouths of the lions. Now the king couldn't sleep all night, but I'm sure Daniel just laid his head down on one of those lions, took a good night's sleep out of the deal. He wasn't worried at all. What we see in this section of Daniel, we see a loyal rebel. a man who is loyal to his God, but he's also loyal to his king. If you'll look in verse 22, last part, he says, before him, he was innocent, and I've done no hurt. He had done nothing to harm the kingdom, the king, or anybody. All he did was stay true to his God. He's a loyal rebel. His only crime was that he served God. So what happened to, point two, under the trap backfires, what happened to those who accused Daniel? They and their families were cast into the den of lions. We don't have to defend this, okay? Somebody might say, well, what kind of God would allow families to be thrown? They may have been part of it. Or it may have been the way that this law was carried out, the sins of the father. We don't have to defend it. They may have known about it. They may have been in partnership about it. They may have even conspired with the men. Kind of like Jezebel and Ahab over Naboth's vineyard. We don't know. All we know is that they were thrown in. Now, point three on your study guide. How do we know that the lions had not been fed, or had been sedated? What do you see there?
Before they reached the floor, they were devoured.
Before they hit the ground, their lions had them. It let you know that they were hungry. Once again, we see the hand of God in protecting his children. Now, if you'll flip over to your last page, as we finish up chapter 6, the first six chapters of Daniel show the sovereignty of God. If you remember, one of the reasons why Daniel was written was to show the sovereignty of God. In chapter 1, he's protector of the captives. Chapter 2, the revealer of the future. Chapter 3, the Lord of the fire. Chapter 4, the humbler of the proud. Chapter 5, the avenger of his honor. In chapter 6, he is the Lord of the lions. These are the first six chapters of the book of Daniel. Historical beginning next week, we're going to get into the apocalyptic section of the book of Daniel. Go ahead and read chapter 7. We may get into chapter 7 next week. We will have a discussion upon apocalyptic speech or prophetic speech or figurative speech, however you want to describe it, before we get into it. If you want to, any outside resources that you want to bring in, bring it in. But we will be studying the apocalyptic section beginning, well, we'll start next week anyway. Any questions of what we discussed so far? All right, God bless you. Thank you.